Good morning, good afternoon, and good evening to you all. This is the Business Day Spotlight, your destination for African business made simple. My name is Mbio Gabaza, and for today, we're getting into a continuation of a conversation and discussion that we've had a number of times on this particular platform, and that's around the digital infrastructure. We have spoken to many, people, around the various types of, infrastructure that is enabling the digital environment that we are in, from satellite providers to telecoms operators, mobile operators, and also data center providers, just around all of the stuff that needs to be put into the ground to actually make sure that we are able to communicate and to do the work that we do. So for today, we're joined by a team that has put together a white paper, just around, how independent tower operators or tower companies are actually helping with the 4 and 5G revolution on the African continent. That's, according to a recent white paper that's called The Independent Tower Industry as a Key Enabler of the Development of African Telecommunications. And, that is a paper that was, done by SBA Communications. And we are joined by one of the authors and president, of Telecom Advisory Services, that is Dr. Raoul Katz. Dr. Katz, greetings to you.
Hello, good morning or good afternoon.
Now, thank you so much, for being with us, for today. Maybe taking a step back before we delve into the paper itself, maybe you could just give us a little bit of context of your world, your world, your interest when it comes to something like this, and I guess the impetus to put together, a white paper like this.
Yeah, that's an interesting question. In fact, I've been doing research and consulting in the field of telecommunications for over 40 years. In many cases, or in most cases, I have been dealing particularly with the service providers, that is, the people that we are, the operators that we are in touch with as consumers to receive the service, let's say, fixed or mobile telecommunications. Now, probably around a couple of years, I've started focusing on this particular concept of towers, which, interestingly enough, it's a critical component of cellular networks, and however, they haven't been studied in depth relative to how critical and important it is for the delivery of service. Essentially, us as consumers, we are familiar with these towers that are, deployed throughout the landscape, mostly in urban settings, but also along highways and in some rural areas, which are the device or the infrastructure within which different operators hang their wireless equipment in order to deliver the calls. And incidentally, as a side note, the reason why we call wireless services cellular is essentially because those networks follow the morphological organization of a beehive. Each cell of the beehive is the point where the signal is being transmitted, and at the center of the cell, there's a tower with the electronic equipment, and all beehives are interconnected among themselves in order to be able to deliver the service. If you don't have towers, you don't have wireless service. And more importantly, if traffic keeps on growing and becoming more intensive, you need to deploy more towers in order to facilitate or enable this kind of communication. So I've been focusing on this primarily because I become aware that in order to tackle the revolution in wireless communications beyond the traditional 4G service, which is the standard within which we receive the service in this day and age, going to 5G, which enables most of the video calls and accessing YouTube and being able to interact along services such as the one that we have right now, you need a lot of towers. And not only that, you need a lot of towers, but there's a particular industry dynamic that has led to the appearance of the concept of independent tower companies. An independent tower company is what in economics we label a specialist, is essentially a company whose function primarily is construct, operate, and deploy these towers. And they sell the service to wireless service providers. Why do we have this emergence of these independent tower companies? It's because what in economics we call the specialists. In the development of industries, and that has been studied in economics since the late 20th century, the value chain of an industry tends to fragment itself, and you have the emergence of particular players whose function is to fulfill a specific service within that value chain. And in this context, it's the operation of towers. And they are independent because they are not directly linked to the mobile service operator, but that they offer the service to them for a certain price, and the price is related to the equipment that is being hung from those towers.
I just wanted to interject at that point, to maybe get your sense, especially as someone who has observed and covered the industry for as long as you had. One of the things that is that has become apparent to me, at least, is that when it comes to telecommunications operators, they tend to, depending on where in the technology cycle they are, they tend to see certain types of infrastructure as being strategic and to maybe invest CapEx into that type of infrastructure. But at the point at which they no longer see it as being strategic or a new technology comes along, then they decide that, you know what, we'll let go of this and then we'll take on that. And in the South African context, I think about MTN and Vodacom that have famously spent 10 billion rand almost every year for a number of years building out their infrastructure in a country like South Africa, and more so, you know, on the continent. But they've seemed to have reached a point in the cycle now where they no longer see mobile towers as being strategic and have been hiving them off. MTN has almost completely done away with its towers, selling to the likes of IHS. Vodacom is carving them out. And we see fiber now being the one that they all want to hold on to and invest in, etc. That's what I've seen in the small time that I've, been observing the industry. But what I wanted to check with you is, have the independent tower operators been there from the beginning, or were they the result of this cycle, that we're talking about now, to say, as, certain operators start hiring them off, then you see an emergence perhaps of Helios or American Tower Company and all of those other, bigger players?
Yeah, well, it's interesting that you ask that, because in fact, there are, I think, two parallel processes at play. One of them is the recognition of what is it that drives competitive advantage for a wireless service operator. And there is the reconnaissance that the ownership of particular elements of the infrastructure doesn't convey competitive advantage. And from that perspective, as a mobile service operator, I'd rather focus on those elements, for instance, product development, operations of the network, customer care, distribution, that actually derive a competitive advantage and the ability to build market share. And if I get to an agreement with an external player that provides a particular service without any additional cost or impositions, where the transaction costs are low, I'd rather push them outside my own organization structure. So that's the number one element. Obviously, there's a second one, which you somewhat alluded to, which is the fact that Given the pressure that some operators are under from financial let's be clear, performance of the stock, they see an opportunity of capture on the momentum of reducing their OPEX in terms of the operations, gain some financial resources by selling out, by carving out portions of the infrastructure and selling them out, and that from a let's say more tactical perspective creates another incentive for them to sell those particular assets. So those two things, the strategic economic viability and what conveys economic advantage, a strategic advantage, and then the other one in terms of the financial pressure, those two things are operating in parallel, which is pushing a trend that you can see on a worldwide basis. Every single region around the world, there are similar processes at play. Now, that being said, in my studies, what I've seen is that there are some operators that still believe that a tower conveys competitive advantage. And you see somewhat of a game. When I'm talking game, I'm talking about game theoretical framework, where they say, no, I'm going to keep this control by reaching, because reaching those customers by owning that tower gives me an advantage to, control my market share. But all the studies that have been done in network theory and competitive advantage indicate that, in fact, the ownership of the tower does not convey strategic advantage, for the same reason that the ownership of an ATM doesn't convey competitive advantage to a bank, which is why all banks are interlinked by these ATM networks for dispensing cash. So I think that those are the trends at play. And as you mentioned, those are very clear in South Africa. They weren't present at the beginning of the development of the industry, but they're definitely drivers as they exist right now.
And specifically looking at the independent providers, right? And that's the focus of your white paper. Are those companies putting down CapEx, you know, from what you can see? Or do they maybe take existing portfolios and it's a process of at least making sure that, you know, uptime is maintained, you've got your redundancies on energy and sites are kept, up to par? And I ask that simply because there does seem to be a lot of at least investment interest, in infrastructure, companies and providers. When we see some of the deals that are being financed, maybe a small player will put together money and maybe, you buy out the tower portfolio of a particular operator. But once those operators have have the towers on hand, are those operators, for at least from what you can see, do they build? Because at least from where I stand, it seems as if when I look around the world, you see what the likes of T-Mobile have done in the US, and AT&T, and then obviously in Africa, it's MTN and Vodacom and all of those guys. It seems as if the actual building of towers has been a operator-led, type of, process as opposed to independent providers. Not to say that they don't build, but at least from where I sit, it seems as if the majority of the building action does rather come from your telecoms providers, and then your independent players almost take on a custodianship. I don't know.
I see your point. I mean, in fact, there is quite a bit of capital being invested by these independent players. There are a couple of issues in the question that I think need to be addressed. Yeah. There's no homogeneous perspective on independent tower companies. And let me explain to you why. Because I think that in some respect, one could assimilate the independent tower industry to the real estate business. And in the real estate business, you have strong investors and you have speculators. Speculators that say, well, on the basis of the momentum that exists in terms of taking ownership, or I will actually construct or build 25 towers in a certain area of a country with the perspective of flipping them at a certain point in time to someone else. The same way you make a building in an area, in a neighborhood of a city that is particularly hot from a real estate standpoint. I call those speculators. Small, and not only small, but also in terms of the way they invest and deploy, the quality of the infrastructure that they deploy is much more limited and at a lower level. And I've seen that in many countries around the world. And then you have the large players, the ones that are here to stay, the consistent ones, the large independent tower companies that do invest in CapEx. The way they tend to do the investment is not that they don't deploy independently of the needs of the wireless operators. The wireless operators deal with them on a regular basis, and they say, listen, I need to expand service in this particular rural area. I don't believe that I can afford building the towers myself. I want 20 towers in this particular region of the country. Let's discuss a deal. And then the tower company goes and constructs those. But just to give you a sense of quantities, the construction of a tower requires roughly between $150,000 to $200,000, just merely the construction. And there's the element of electricity that is critical. So how you're going to make sure that the equipment that is hung from the tower is going to be supported. But nevertheless, it's about that range. And the requirements that come from the service providers, the telecom service providers, is, I need 20 towers in this particular region because I want to extend service. And at that point in time, what the independent tower company says, well, let me discuss this. And then they go to the other wireless service providers and they say, there is an idea of deploying a particular tower in this particular region. Would you also be interested in hanging your equipment from this particular tower? So there is a flow of investment, of CapEx going on, being fueled by this second category of tower companies. Not the first one, the speculator.
Yeah, no, and I'm glad that, you're helping us to understand, some of those dynamics, and especially the fact that you can't take when framing such a big conversation, we risk getting into a lot of generalities, because, like you said, tower companies, you can't have a monolithic view on them because, you know, the region, the country, all of this stuff, the needs placed on an independent tower provider in Nigeria, for example, is very different from someone who's operating in another country, because there they almost have become a power utility that needs to make sure that, you know, all their towers are kept going, because there isn't a reliable, you know, source of power from the national grid perspective. So even how you construct your networks and all of these consultations that you're doing with your providers, it's different. And the types of SLAs that you have in place are going to be completely different from, you know, another part of the world where maybe the power utility is providing 100% of electricity and it's reliable, and all you have to do is to at least make sure that there's some backup, and that, you know, so very interesting from that point of view. One of the things that we are quite curious about that we have been seeing in Africa, you've got the likes of IHS that have pretty large portfolios, of towers. You've also got your mobile operators. But one of the things that's happening, you know, I guess hearkening to where we began the conversation, is that on the independent point of view, operators are letting go of their towers. Independent companies are taking these on. In certain cases, recently in South Africa, we've had Telkom selling off its portfolio of towers, SwiftNet to a private consortium. So that private consortium now becomes an independent tower provider. The economics of being an independent tower provider. Maybe you could talk to us about that. How attractive is the space? Banks, lenders, financiers seem to be quite amenable to extending capital to these types of deals. So I guess they're seeing something. The way that we understand it, at least you know that you've got long-term tenants, reliable revenues. But outside of that, maybe you could help us to paint a picture of how attractive of an investment or a business it is to operate an independent tower company.
Yeah, very good. That's an extremely relevant question because, in fact, if you go back to the figure that I quoted, that the construction of a tower, and this is, don't take this as a homogeneous number, the $150,000 to $200,000, because in a city, the cost could be much lower because you can put a tower on top of a building and therefore the height of the tower cannot be necessarily as tall as if you were in the middle of a rural area. But that, take that as a given, $150,000 to $200,000. If the tower, if you hang equipment of only one operator from that tower, basically the way the economics work is that that operator pays a rent to the tower company as a result of, you know, hanging the equipment from the tower. And the rent on the deal is such that it is in the interest of a tower company to have more than one tenant in a particular tower, because it's the same thing as in real estate. You want to maximize the monthly revenues that you receive as a result of renting space on that particular tower. If the situation is such that the tenancy does not exceed one, maybe the business is not that attractive. But if you can actually share that tower, two or better off three operators from that particular tower, then the numbers start to get quite attractive. Now, that's from the perspective of the operator. The other one, to be frank with you, is the perspective from why are towers critical to expand coverage in rural areas where no one independently can afford building a tower for $150,000 simply because the density is so low that the number of users that you can gain out of that for an operator do not pay back the ability to actually invest in building a tower. So in that context, particularly increasing in coverage in rural areas, the tower becomes a critical. That's why we use the word enabler. If we want to expand coverage of wireless telecommunications in Africa, the tower is a means to an end, because that provides the ability to share the infrastructure across operators. And our work, and which is public, I mean, actually, we build econometric models to show that the higher the percentage of towers being operated by independent tower players, the higher the coverage, the lower the prices, the more the penetration or adoption of wireless telecommunications. So all the economic benefits attached to the deployment of these independent tower companies exist, and we can see it on the data. And which is why, by the way, going back to your original question, why the business is so attractive. It's so attractive just simply because it fulfills a social need, it facilitates the deployment for the operators, and ultimately has economic development implications. I don't know if I've answered your question or whether there are any follow-ons.
No, it certainly does, because one of the things that I guess there's two things I wanted to pick your brain on, and especially because, you know, for you and I, we could probably go into the weeds a little bit around this infrastructure, what's going on, the different technologies. But at least from the mainstream point of view, the normal person who's accessing various telecommunication services, the two buzzwords that have been happening is the first one is just around 5G. A lot has been said about 5G, the promise of 5G, fiber-like speeds, all of this stuff. And I think I have an idea of what you might say, but I think my curiosity was around where what we were talking about earlier on, right? To say, if we are going to be building out, you know, all of this 5G capability, as far as you can see, because a number of operate because of the emergence of your independent tower providers, is this one of those situations where we're going to be seeing, I guess, that collaboration with telecoms operators, where the telecoms operator will say, "Hey, I'm not going to fork out any money to build out a 5G network, but I'm gonna go to my tower provider and say to them, hey, this is what we're hoping to do, but your current, I guess, the density of the towers doesn't work for us to deploy 5G effectively. What can we do?"
Critical question. Let's start from the capacity of investment. When I compare, take South Africa, how much CapEx is going from the wireless service providers on an annual basis, operators are spending roughly $25 per capita in operators. Just to give you a sense, advanced economies, the countries of the OECD, for instance, they're investing roughly $150.
Wow.
Now, that difference allows them, the latter, the OECD countries, to invest in 5G because they have the resources to actually deploy the infrastructure. But if developing economies want to make that migration to 5G, which, by the way, it might require tripling the number of sites to deliver the signal, because if you want to get fiber-like, you have to have a lot more sites. There's no investment capacity of the wireless service providers to allow that kind of migration. And so even if you see that Africa is little by little, right now we have roughly, I would say, a coverage on 5G on sub-Saharan Africa between 5 and 10%. In South Africa, it's the highest number because, well, MTN and Telkom have been deploying some more infrastructure. But if we want to proceed along the moving down the 5G path, we have to find some enabling process that would allow them to continue investing, given the amounts of money that are being required on the basis of the limits they have. By the way, why is it that South Africa is investing $25 per capita, wireless service providers, the capex is $25? Well, because the average revenue per user is so low. This is like the nature of the beast. When I'm selling less money because my prices are so low, there's no way I can keep on investing the amount of carriers operating in developed economies do. Just to give you an example, the ARPU in average revenue per user in a country like the United States is roughly $56 per month compared to what we get in countries in sub-Saharan Africa, which is much lower. And in some of those countries, it's single digit. How can we do 5G? We have to move to a shared infrastructure. We have to move to a shared infrastructure that allows us to cut the required investment levels. And sharing is directly related to the tower companies that provide that ability. So if we want to guarantee the migration to 5G and where the populations and let's be clear, primarily enterprises are going to benefit of it, you have to share the infrastructure. There's no way you can actually think of this without sharing, without relying on independent tower companies. And that's the name of the game.
And when it comes to that sharing, what do you see being the structure? How real, because of course there's the normal sharing that we've known around towers where you can have one tower site and you can have multiple, you know, carriers having the equipment on a particular site. But for 5G, do you see the same, you know, type of thinking, or do you perhaps see a situation where maybe one provider goes out and says, okay, fine, we've built out a 5G network in a specific area. If you as another carrier want to make use of that network, sort of your maybe not MVNO, but you know, that type of network sharing types of agreements, how do you see that playing out?
My answer would be all of the above. I mean, there are different ways. And the concept that you just described is in the parlance of the industry is the NetCo. That's one alternative. I've seen in some countries the sharing occurring at that level where, let me give you an example. In one country, which is not in Africa, but the three operators, is a country that has three to four operators, they contribute sites. Basically, they put them in a certain company that is spun off from their own facilities. They created a company. They relied on the spectrum that each of them had acquired, and they got investment even from the Facebook, Google, and development banks, and they provide the service to all of them in order to get into rural areas. That's another alternative. So I think that we shouldn't be limiting ourselves in terms of which models are more applicable. We should look at the different alternatives and try to move and be experimenting, recognizing that the dominant driver is the need to share infrastructure.
And when it comes to, and I like the fact that, you know, you used that type of example, because I did want to touch on rural, you know, the rural connectivity, because I think rural connectivity is one of those things that sort of equalizes the digital divide between developed and developing countries, right? Yeah. People might think that the United States is flush with broadband connectivity, but the rise of Starlink has actually shown that there were huge gaps, particularly in your rural areas, which is a big problem that is faced, in Africa and, you know, many other parts of the world. So when it comes to the rural piece, right, from an opportunity point of view, do you still see, and this is the second of the buzz terms I was going to be asking you about, which is satellite, right? Everyone is talking about low Earth orbiting satellites, the likes of OneWeb, the likes of Starlink and others, Project Kuiper. Do those come in and be the dominant way in which people connect in a rural setting? Or do you think there's still some appetite to put some capex into some of those rural areas, because at least for now the satellite providers have made it seem as if they're providing the service at a cheaper rate than if someone was to go and try to plug some of those holes with physical towers in place?
Yeah, I think that the devil is in the details, because I've seen situations where wireless networks are totally capable of delivering the service in rural areas. I mean, essentially, think about what are the components of a wireless network. You have the tower, you have the equipment that is relaying the signal at within the cell, of the beehive. And then you have backhaul, is the connectivity between the tower and the center that provides the intelligence for calls to move from one cell to the other. That's essentially it. The two components that are critical are the tower and the backhaul. Obviously, the equipment as well is important. But so how do you solve that? I mean, backhaul historically has been done through fiber optics, has been done through microwaves, has been done through satellite in some cases, obviously with different quality levels. So I think that one cannot see as one size fits all and saying, well, the satellite industry will address the needs in rural areas, because in all honesty, I think that the devil is in the details relative to the numbers. How much are they going to charge for the service, and how much affordability is viable for those populations in rural areas to receive the service? Just to give you a situation in point, if you take 3G, which is for us is history, no? But 3G, there's roughly 30% of South African or the South African population that could connect to a 3G network, but doesn't because they cannot pay for the service. 30%. They cannot pay for the service because essentially, given the distribution of income, in a country like South Africa, which is a typical country in the South, so to speak, the bottom of the pyramid, the cost of service equals to 12% of the gross national income per capita per month. And at that level, the cost is too high. Now tell me how satellite providers are going to be able to lower the cost that the operator of the 3G network is offering in the market. That's a big question. Would they be able to lower the cost beyond and make it more affordable to that basis of the pyramid? I think that still wireless service providers have an advantage there. I mean, clearly, it all depends on the density. And that's why I'm very leery about formulations along the line of one size fits all that says, for rural, we go satellite. There are different types of rural areas and different types of densities. And some of them, the wireless service is quite appropriate to fulfill the needs of the population. Granted, they might not get 5G. And that's an important point. They might not get 5G. But as long as I can provide 4G to these rural populations, I think that we're making a big social contribution.
All right. So it has been a really great discussion, you know, just talking to Raul just around what's going on in the world of telecoms infrastructure, specifically independent tower providers, just leading us through some of the history, you know, as to how and when we saw this emergence of your independent players versus, you know, telecoms providers actually building out their networks, balancing out some of those economic imperatives, you know, what is strategic to hold, what is strategic, you know, to have as an operational cost versus being a capital cost. Also talking to us, you know, about the fact that we can't be looking at the independent tower market as a monolith. It depends on, I guess, you know, where you are and what the market is, you know, and I guess some of the idiosyncrasies that lend themselves to that particular, you know, operating environment, and also giving us some insight, you know, into some of the models around CapEx going forward, and also leading into if we're going to be building out things like your 5G networks, what does that mean going forward, right? What is the model? And he actually says that there are a couple of approaches, you know, that can be used. He gave us a little bit of a distinction between speculators in the market, you know, versus perhaps some of the more, you know, long-term, you know, types of players, and how that lends itself to how people are actually allocating capital. And then ending off, you know, talking about some of the big, you know, buzzwords, which would be 5G, and, you know, how independent providers are navigating that particular space, and then ending off talking about satellite, And one of the big things that he ended off by saying is that we can't look at satellite as being the be-all and end-all, because there are a lot of economics that need to make sense, you know, for it to be an option as opposed to being the one-size-fits-all answer for all rural connectivity around the world. Anything else to add here before we let you go, Dr. Katz?
No, Mudib, I think you've captured pretty well in a succinct factor, a framework, everything that we discussed about. I think that the takeaways are along the lines of what you've summarized. So thank you very much.
All right. So that's been it. We were in discussion with Dr. Raul Katz. He's one of the authors, of the white paper that is titled The Independent Tower Industry as a Key Enabler of the Development of African Telecommunications. And he's also president of Telecom Advisory Services. Dr. Katz, thank you so much for being with us today.
Been a pleasure. Thank you.
And that's been it for this edition of the Business Day Spotlight. Remember that you can find our latest podcasts on Business Live. That's under the podcast Business Day Spotlight tab on Twitter with hashtag BD Spotlight. And remember that you can review and subscribe for free on iono.fm, Spotify, Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Pocket Casts, or wherever you choose to get your pods casted. I've been Mudiwa Gavaza of the Business Day and Financial Mail. And this has been another edition of the Business Day Spotlight, which is a multimedia live production. So for myself and the rest of the team, it is good evening, good afternoon, and good morning.